live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Ralph Martiri, Bruno Barron, and Health Management Executive Mike Condrum. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the SiriusXM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btbtalk@aol.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, according to late-breaking news Sunday afternoon, it appears that the White House may be ready to drop their call for a public option to their health care reform plan. And again, that is the breaking big news right at this very moment. Senator Kent Conrad, who's a Democrat from North Dakota, he's not been a big supporter of the public option. He's called for a different option. And he basically said today, because what they're trying to come up with is some form of a cooperative. And it basically is an idea that's been tried in rural areas, in other areas, in utilities and in agriculture. So he's picking up on that concept. But he did say today, quote, this is Kent Conrad, "It's not government run and government controlled. It's membership run and membership controlled, but it does provide a nonprofit competitor for the for-profit insurance companies, and that's why it has appeal on both sides," end of quote. He also went on to say that, in his opinion, this concept probably has bipartisan support in the Senate and is likely to get the votes necessary to be part of the final package. Bruno Barron, you've been covering this story. We're going to be talking about it throughout the whole broadcast this evening. It's not perfect for you, but is it a better plan than it was 24 hours ago?
Yeah, it's definitely an improvement when you get rid of the public option. I mean, they've gotten rid of the granny clauses. They've gotten rid of the public option. Most of the most egregious things that we've read about in the bill, they've kind of backtracked off of. Basically, it's back to the drawing board. I'd like to see them go more along the lines of reconnecting the consumer with the provider. We need more health care and less worry about and fixing health care than we need fixing health care insurance. We're too focused on insurance. We're not focused enough on health care.
Mike Condrum, is this a significant shift in the debate happening right today?
Bruce, I think it is, and thank you for having me on the program. It's actually an exciting opportunity if you think about it. We have 47 million, almost 50 million people that are uninsured in this country. And whether it's a public option or whether it's a cooperative, the real goal in here is trying to be able to extend more insurance and more coverage to folks who right now don't have it. And one thing to be very clear about is you find we're covering those folks anyhow. If they're not receiving insurance some way, somehow, we find that the U.S. is picking up the tab anyhow. So it's very pleasing to see, and I think it will change and shift the debate somewhat.
Now, by the way, we should mention that Senator Conrad's program, it is consumer-owned nonprofit cooperatives, and they would sell insurance in competition with private industry, not unlike the way, as I mentioned, electric and agriculture co-ops currently operate, especially in rural states. There would be a $3 billion to $4 billion initial support made by the government. Those co-ops would operate under national structure, and they would have state affiliates, but they would be independent of the government. They would be required, however, to maintain the type of financial reserves that private companies must maintain to keep in case of unexpected high claims.
You know, what's wonderful about that, Bruce, we talked about this a few weeks ago on your program as a potential solution. And what I
and they
heard,
were obviously listening.
That's right. And also, the Secretary of Health and Human Services was quoted today as saying that the public option has never been an essential element of the bill. What is most important is trying to find a way to create a solution that gets more people coverage and gives people choice. And what's interesting about this is it somewhat neutralizes a lot of the discourse that's been out there about bureaucrats making decisions. I think the administration's been clear all along that what they've been seeking is trying to bridge the gap of those 46, 47 million folks that are uninsured. And I see an opportunity here for substantial reform. If you read the bill, if you see what's out there right now, a lot of it has to do with reforming Medicare, reforming Medicaid, and being able to create some solutions and savings there.
Bruno, when you look at this in pure political terms, mm-hmm. you've got a Democratic president of the United States, huge majority in the House, a slight majority now in the Senate. Basically, all the eggs in the Democratic basket. Now, granted, we're talking about mm-hmm. a Democrat Senator, Kent Conrad, who comes up with the option.
Right.
But are you surprised at the ineffectiveness of the White House in this plan?
As someone who was very critical of Obama's campaign to begin with, I mean, he obviously is a great campaigner. But this does not surprise me. There was never any indicator that Barack Obama was going to be a fantastic leader or a brilliant leader. Quite frankly, you could say that he has crashed on the rocks of health care even faster than Bill Clinton did in 1993. So I've never been all that impressed. This was to be expected. The fact is that we like to throw out the 47 million uninsured figure very much, but that breaks down in a lot of different ways and a lot of like who's uninsured based on their position and how young they are or what their job situation is. What Barack Obama seems to have forgotten is, and what many people in it sounds like the Democratic Congress have forgotten, is that 80% of the people in America have access to health care or have health insurance, and a good number of them, 80-90%, are happy with it. Everybody forgets that the minute you start messing with what people are happy with, you're going to start dropping in the polls.
Now, one thing that was said in the initial analysis that came out in the wake of this switch today, or this appeared, the White House hasn't confirmed it, but the stories are certainly being leaked in that way. Ralph Marturi, let me get your sense. It basically said that the liberals, the strong liberal supporters of the president, are the ones that are going to believe that maybe he caved too early and should have stuck in there for a government program. What's your take on that?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think the most liberal branch of the Democratic Party was expecting Barack Obama to go in there and radically reform government along lines of their major issues and concerns. He's not that kind of a politician. He is an incrementalist. He is a guy that will work across party lines. He is a guy that takes a very slow and thoughtful approach. So I think the most liberal wing of the party was destined to be disappointed, and probably rightly so. I mean, it's good that Barack is taking a more measured approach to policy change. We just got through the Bush administration and supported or not supported. It was a radical, aggressive administration that pushed an agenda through Congress, whether you liked what they did or not. I think it's time for a little more thoughtful approach, especially given the recession that we're living through and some of the other concerns that people have on their minds. So I think it's okay that the most liberal wing of the Democratic Party be somewhat disappointed. I think they better continue to support this president, who ultimately will deliver the goods, I think, in a number of major areas, but is going to take his time doing it.
I also want to talk about the climate with which this reform was attempted in the wake of serious economic problems in the country. Whether or not past efforts by the government to bail out the automobile industry and the banking industry, that maybe some of the concerns and fears that the American people have about a government-run bailout system, trying to do this in the wake of that may have been literally an impossible political task. We'll talk about that when we come back. 1-800-723-8029 from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Introducing Ally Bank's 9-month no-penalty CD with a great interest rate of 1.85% APY. Just to make that perfectly clear, that's a no-penalty CD. No penalty for early withdrawal, medium or late withdrawal, no extra fees, forfeiture, and no fine print anywhere. Just a high-interest 9-month no-penalty CD that lets you move your money anytime, anywhere. It doesn't get any more straightforward than that. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
These are tough economic times, so I want you to think about something. Gold. And Goldline is the company you can trust for your gold needs. They've been in business since 1960, so call them today. 877-361-COIN. That's 877-361-COIN. They've been audited from a Big Four accounting firm. Their financials are solid. So call them today for a free investor's kit. 877-361-COIN. You get the free DVD and free shipping on your first order at 877-361-COIN. 361 coin. And remember, goldline.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. 1-800-723-8289. We're talking about health care reform in the United States. And again, in case you tuned in, the late news this afternoon suggests that the White House is ready to sort of back away from a public option to the health care plan. And they're going with they may be going with a cooperative plan, as espoused by Kent Conrad from North Dakota. Before the break, I had made the point that what's happened over the last 6 months, when the president is really focused on health care reform, there has been the automobile crisis. There's been the bailout of the automobile industry, the bailout of the fiscal of the banking industry, and people's mistrust of government in this time is very, very strong, regardless of what your political stripes might be. And I'm wondering whether or not this effort at this point in time really that was the death knell of the Obama plan, whatever that plan really is, was probably cast maybe 6 or 7 or even 8 months ago. Do you agree with that, Mike?
Well, I do to some extent. One thing I want to take issue with, we heard, was that this was somehow a knock on the administration. I think one thing that I like in what I see this administration doing is Obama's been very clear that health care needs to be reformed and needs to be reformed now. The public option has never been something that has been a key element, and that's what we heard from the secretary today. But also, one thing, even in a co-op, Let's be very clear about what's going to happen here. It's going to cost, and as Senator Conrad points out, approximately $3 to $4 billion just to get the co-op off the ground. So in order to cover that many people, to be able to bring people in that right now aren't receiving coverage, it's going to cost something. Some of that can be paid, roughly 2/3, by generating some efficiencies in the current systems in Medicare and Medicaid. But it will require some additional investment. And I think there's an acknowledgement there.
Do we know yet what percentage of that 46 to 50 million uninsured will be covered under the cooperative plan?
Not yet. And that's really what's going to where the rubber's going to meet the road here. I want to make sure that, you know, with 50 stages to go here, we're still in stage 1.5. And what really is going to need to take place over the next few months, weeks and months, as Congress comes back into session, is really starting to be clear about what that is going to look like.
One last question about on the politics of it. Did he try to bite off too much? Or the other question that would be asked is the great communicator really a great communicator?
I don't think it. I'm not really questioning Barack Obama's communication skills. I mean, he ran on healthcare reform, and he tried to do healthcare reform, just like George Bush ran on Social Security reform and tried to do that right after he was reelected. I think if there's any mistake that was made here, it's letting Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats write a bill that had Barack Obama's name put on it, when in fact there was never really an Obama bill, so to speak. So he kind of gives himself an out of saying, no, I only wanted to do this, or I wasn't really that interested in this, that, or the other thing.
Which allegedly he did because he didn't want to make the same mistake that Hillary Clinton made. Right. He didn't want it to be perceived as White House-dominated, crammed down your throat. So politically, he tried to do it, and maybe that was the wrong decision.
It was similarly. I think it was the New York Times. Somebody wrote an article this last week. I don't know who the author was, but they said that he actually overcorrected, where the Clintons appeared to have it rammed down your throat, so to speak. And he kind of like was kind of hands off and let Congress do this. And he ended up getting tied in with a fairly unpopular and radically bad plan.
Ralph?
Yeah, it's sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? I mean, you know, so Hillary Clinton was pilloried for locking herself away in an ivory tower and coming out with the best and the brightest program for health care reform. Now Barack Obama says, okay, you're the experienced legislators. I'm the new chief executive. Work it through the process. Have your hearings. Come up with a bill. Here are the basic things I want to accomplish. Accomplish them. And that's exactly what he did. And I think there's nothing wrong with that approach. Could he have been a little more hands-on? Could he have gotten – yeah, I think he could have. But I don't think his approach was wrong, and I think in this environment it was the right approach. He just didn't end up in a bill that was politically viable.
Well, the other thing – I mean, it seems to me that part of the brilliant part of what has been happening is if you look at what happened to Hillary, I mean, you had all of the establishment industries that ganged up on her. Right. This did not happen. I mean, the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, ARP,
the AMA, the Nurses Association,
they were all on board with, even though the details were not completely known. he had basically circled the wagons with all those that conceivably could have been his enemies on this.
One thing that I continue to like about what the president is trying to achieve here is to try to build a consensus. And to your point, Ralph, well, he may not have set out all the details. He has called out some ugly truths in health care right now, the issues of pre-existing conditions, prohibiting lifetime and annual caps that insurance companies will do. And we all know that that's a challenge. When you have when you try to take a private solution to something that is so public as the health and welfare of the citizens of this country, those things are going to become in natural conflict. And there is a solution when you read behind what the White House has really suggested is let's create some real reform that not only gets people coverage but adds some efficiencies to a system. What you also don't hear, though, is the scare tactic that if nothing is done, in the next 7 or 8 years, we're likely to have a problem with Medicare. We're not going to be able to fund it. We have so many people getting ready to come onto Medicare and so few people that are going to be able to pay into the system that there could be a challenge if we don't do something now.
Today in the New York Times, the president wrote an op-ed piece, and he singled out four promises or four points that he really wanted to address as part of his health care reforms. And let's take a look at those and see if there's any agreement around the table or where the disagreement might be in what his goals are. First, if you don't have health insurance, you will have a choice of high-quality, affordable coverage for yourself and your family, coverage that will stay with you whether you move, change your job, or lose your job. Reaction to point number one. Anybody who would vehemently agree or disagree with that?
Well, it's so nice in general. I mean, it's a warm, soft puppy.
Okay, let's.
It's more than a warm, soft puppy.
No one's going to disagree with the sentence. Obviously, the sentence that he's saying there, no one disagrees with. The next question is, how do you get it?
Okay, well, let me just give you some numbers on that. I mean, I think some of this question on whether or not we could afford it is just off point. Medicaid, the last year we have complete numbers for, cost us $186 billion at the federal level, 7% of the federal budget. The war in Iraq was $194 billion. So we get out of Iraq and Afghanistan included in that, but get out of Iraq and Afghanistan, and for not spending one penny more than we're spending today at the federal budget, we could cover every uninsured American through Medicaid, because guess what? Medicaid covers 46.5 million Americans. What do we have, 47 million uninsured? Boom. Done for not one penny more than today. And by the way, that might be good for us, since over the last decade, Medicaid costs increased by 73%. Private health insurance, 119%.
Yeah, Michael, you're frowning.
Yeah, I am, because here's the issue. The reason that is raised and why President Obama raised that is because there's a little bit of defense being played. In some of the scare tactics that were used about the bill and the proposal that's out there was that with a public option, you'll lose the right to choice. And if you read the materials, it's very clear that choice is built in. And so the point that the administration's making there is, quite frankly, in defense to some of this some of these things we've been hearing and what has gotten people so angry is there is nothing in any of these proposals that takes away someone's right to be able to pick what health insurance they have, and they're not going to lose it. And that's really why that point is made.
Bruno.
I beg to differ. Maybe we're reading different information. It's one thing to stand in front of TV cameras and say you'll have your choice of health plans, and it's another thing to have in page 16 of the bill that you won't be able to turn around, that if you change jobs or if you do something, you will not be able to enroll in another private plan. Now, I know that there's details about what the plan says here and there, obviously I don't know every single detail of it, but it is very easy in today's day and age with 1,000-page bills that, you know, Arlen Specter says didn't even bother to read, to turn around and give with the large print and have small print taketh away.
But the devil is in the details, and you're looking at the details.
Well, having the bill on my desk here as we speak, it's quite frankly confusing. A lot of it is definitions, and a lot of these are a series of options that are ultimately going to be blended into true reform. And what we see here are a variety of pilots, a variety of ways to create savings in Medicare and Medicaid, and a variety of proposals about how to make sure that everyone has coverage. And I know you have a couple other points that President Obama mm-hmm. raised today, and you'll hear those in the next three points, is being able to make sure that all folks have a right to coverage, because if they don't, we're paying for it anyhow.
Let's go to the second point. Second, reform will finally bring skyrocketing health care costs under control, which will mean real savings for families, businesses, and our government. will cut hundreds of billions of dollars in waste and inefficiency in federal health programs like Medicare and Medicaid, and in unwarranted subsidies to insurance companies that do nothing to improve care and everything to improve their profits. Your reaction, Mike?
Well, I'm troubled by a knock on the insurance companies, and because, believe it or not, there are many insurance companies that still remain not-for-profit. And you know, to make this a battle about insurance companies probably isn't the right thing to do. The real issue to call out is what the administration has done well up till now, which has raised a true issue of people that can't afford coverage and folks that have pre-existing conditions that just are out in the cold.
But in recent weeks, they have been putting the boogeyman tag on the insurance companies because they needed a boogeyman.
Well, I think that's wrong. I mean, I think it's very easy to take a complex problem and put it on and create a villain. And, you know, having worked with a lot of insurance companies, as I do with our company at CareGuide, there are a number of good and strong insurance companies trying to already create these saving solutions within their own health plans. So I think everyone's in this together. What becomes the issue is when the private sector is allowed to essentially create discriminatory practices that prevent people from getting insurance in the first place.
Ralph, your reaction to point number two here.
Yeah, well, I'm not so sure that the insurance industry is as all light and goodness, frankly, as Mike just laid out. I mean,
I'm going to let you elaborate more. We do have to break. 1-800-723-8029. We're going through the four promises of the goals, of the Obama administration on what their health care reform is. We're still on only point number two. Want to get your reaction at 1-800-723-8029. From Chicago, coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dubois.
It's the medicine your mom gave you as a kid. The medicine you trusted when you were pregnant. And for many, it's what you rely on to ease arthritis pain. Tylenol has been trusted for over 50 years. And while store brands make pills that look just like Tylenol, it's important to know they're not made by Tylenol. The only way to get the brand you've trusted your whole life, the brand doctors recommend most, is to buy the brand doctors recommend most. Feel better. Tylenol. Use only as directed.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
From Saugatuck, Michigan to Saskatchewan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029, America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio. Bruno Barrett is with us this evening. Bruno, tell us a little bit about what you do when you're not here.
I am the founder of Da Vinci Consulting Group, and what I used to do was database consulting for nonprofits. And all the work that I did in database and also on my interest in politics, I got into radio, and I am kind of a communication specialist, so I'm now consulting for politicians. And my guy, who his name is Adam Andrzejewski, I hope he becomes the next governor of the state of Illinois.
And Michael Condrum is also with us today.
Thank you, Bruce. Thanks for having me again on the program. I'm CEO of CareGuide. We're a company based out of Coral Springs, Florida. We actually just recently opened our office in Rosemont, Illinois. And we're a health solutions company that's actually focused on developing some of these solutions, being able to create efficiencies in systems by focusing on people both with chronic care and those that are likely to develop chronic conditions. We have a variety of health professionals that help people both from a technology perspective, getting them acclimated in their home after they're discharged from the hospital, being able to communicate with them about how they're feeling, about what issues they have, and getting them steered back to their physician when we see a problem, essentially keeping them away from unnecessary hospital visits and ER visits. And thank you again for having me on.
Ralph Martiri also joins us, a man with all the stats.
Yeah, Ralph Martiri. I'm executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. We're kind of an odd duck. We're a bipartisan organization with prominent Democrats and Republicans on our board. And what we try to do is take a very data-based approach to these big policy issues that confront public spending, whether at the state or federal level, and try to say, well, you may be a Democrat, you may be a Republican, and you may be entitled to your own opinion, but here are the facts. You're not entitled to your own facts, and we should do something based on the facts.
I want to go back to the second point that the president said in his op-ed piece in the New York Times today. He said we'll cut billions of dollars in waste and inefficiency. When a voter hears that, from a president of the United States, especially a new one that is trying to, you know, express to the American people that he can be trusted. Is that believable when he says that? Because as a voter, I'm saying, wait a minute. If you know where $1 billion in waste is, why aren't you doing it now?
Yeah.
What do we need reforms for you to save that money?
I think that's a lot like hanging in a sign outside your restaurant saying best chili in the world. I mean, people really don't buy it when they hear that anymore, Bruce. It has been so overused and so infrequently acted upon because once these elected officials get into office, they start dealing with a couple of things. Number one, the bureaucracy waste, et cetera, wasn't quite as bad as they thought, and they would have to implement cuts to programs people care about. And number two, there are entrenched bureaucracies in place that are awful difficult to move out where there is waste and inefficiency, and those folks have ways of stymieing the process.
And when he puts in that same sentence Medicare and Medicaid, I mean, one of those sectors that seems to be at least who have turned against him, there are many seniors, because when they hear cut and Medicaid in the same sentence, they are ripe for all kinds of demagogic messages.
Well, I think there's something in the middle there, which is we're not talking about cutting services when we talk about reform, but rather talking about some different approaches to how there are billing issues, how we root out some waste when the EMR, for example, electronic medical record that was part of the stimulus package, try to grab some low-hanging fruit to be able to create some efficiencies. What is somewhat troubling for all of us is when you think about the fact that two-thirds of health reform that's being proposed right now are going to be generated by creating those savings. Given the fact that that's something our company does very routinely, it is somewhat of a down payment to be able to make sure that we can generate those savings in order to be able to pay for the reforms that are put in place.
But go ahead, Bruno.
How are you going to expand access to health care for 47 million so-called uninsured and have it cost less? One of the things I've read, and again, if the details are wrong, one of the things I actually printed out and prepped for today was not this email that supposedly is going around that is supposedly inaccurate, but a fact check of the email. And the fact check itself is kind of scary because they're running around saying this anti-reform email was inaccurate. Here's the real truth. And then they said they told the real truth. You can't cover more people. You can't provide more access. And, you know, everybody admits that there's waste. We all know that there's waste and abuse, and there's waste in single-payer systems, and there's waste in third-payer systems. But you can't cover 47 million more people and then say, by the way, it's going to cost a lot less. It's going to cost a lot. There's a right way to cover people. There's a wrong way to cover people.
You know, the biggest issue, though, is we have a deficit, and the president's been very clear about what he's inherited, almost a $1.3 trillion deficit. And I think it's worth scoring some points, and it's admirable that despite all of that, the president's following through on a commitment he made to the American people, which is to create health reform and to create that now. And some of the best ways to do that are create efficiencies in the system. But obviously, to your point, Bruno, it is going to cost some additional money. There's at least an additional third. And if you just take the president's own words, in the next 10 years, that's going to cost somewhere between $80 to $90 billion each year in order to be an impact and get coverage for more folks and better care. And that's really the issue.
But as part of this shift in support, because the support for a plan, the vast majority of Americans wanted to see, you know, some health care reform. They didn't quite know what it is, but health care reform sounded like a good idea. Okay, so a great communicator is elected president of the United States, and I'm trying to deal with the specifics as well as mm-hmm. the politics of this situation. What happened here? Because it seems to me that in any complicated debate, even the slightest misstatement can be blown out of proportion, or if you have a concerted effort on the part of the opposition. Mm-hmm. And a good example of this is the decision, again, now that there was going to be end-of-life discussions that were going to be part of the health care reform, reforms as they were passed. Well, now the government appears to be. Sebelius said today they're probably not going to include that. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why they're not going to include it is because of Sarah Palin's use of the word death panels in a Facebook message.
Yeah, Sarah Palin has effectively killed a good Republican initiative that was in health care reform.
I wouldn't call that a good Republican initiative, if indeed it was a Republican initiative.
But as Maureen Dowd said today, with one catchy phrase, several footnotes, and a zesty disregard for facts, she managed to hijack the health care debate from Mr. Obama.
Well, and that's
why. Isn't that true?
To some extent, it is, which is why you hear the administration asking us to lower our voices and start to focus on what's really happening. Because there, with a few words on Facebook, how to believe that we're whipping up the American people into a frenzy? And how about a matter of historical proportion?
And by the way, let me just add one other point. Not only, of course, Republicans, a lot of them were quick to say they decried what she said, because she also went on to describe the system as evil.
Right.
But what she did was she engaged Rahm Emanuel's brother, Zeke Emanuel. She basically put him behind the eight ball. She basically somewhat emasculated him publicly. Mm-hmm. And then the reality is you have Charles Grassley, who's one of the chief negotiators on this issue. He's picking up some of the fear that she has created with her Facebook comment, and he's putting it into the national debate.
Well, maybe a good example of where technology can actually hurt us, but a matter of history that I wanted to raise, and President Obama raised it on his Saturday speech, is if you go back to the days of establishing Social Security under President Roosevelt, there were these boogeymen that were invented then, and that a federal snooping, and we were worried about forcing Americans to wear dog tags. When President Kennedy sought to develop Medicare, there was essentially a concern of socialized medicine. And what President Obama says, it sounds familiar. Well, we have different technology now, and those rumors can travel very quickly and incite people.
But the thing is that I've heard that, and the fact is that Social Security wasn't that great an idea. If we were to revisit Social Security today, we would probably do it differently. Now, I know that, you know, Ralph's looking at me funny over here, so he'll have his say in
a second.
It
only lifts 50% of the seniors in our country out of poverty, and besides that, it's a horribly terrible program that really doesn't work so well.
But leaving that aside, I mean, you know, Medicare and Medicaid did lead toward a cost shifting that caused problems. The fact that it took – I mean, we're sitting here debating socialized medicine and single payer. We have a president who a few days ago gets on the news and says, I'm not for single payer, while all over YouTube there's the president when he was campaigning, before he was president, saying essentially, I'm for single payer, I just want to create a system that gets us there.
Well, that's called a liar, Ralph, and then we're going to go to calls. Two quick things. First of all, on Social Security, just to get in on that, you know, even this year it is generating a surplus, Social Security, as it has for the last 30 years.
For two or three more years.
Well over $100 billion a year. The problem is we've had administration after administration, Democrat and Republican both, take the Social Security surplus and use it to cover general operating expenses like they're not supposed to. So not only is it not a bankrupt system, if we actually put that away like we were supposed to, it would be solvent ad infinitum into the future. That's number one. Number two, it lifts 50% of our seniors out of poverty. Number three, it's the primary income source for 73% of our seniors. Its administrative costs are 2%. It's a good program.
Well, what?
Now on health care, why individuals cared so much. You said, you know, they supported Obama in his calls for health care reform. Here's some numbers. When George Bush took office in January 2001, the average premium cost for a family of four was $6,200. When Obama took office, the legacy of George Bush had doubled to $12,000. Now, that's huge doubling since inflation over that time, CPI cumulative, was less than 23%. You know, wages went up about 3%. So what? Do people care about this stuff? Does it matter to them? Yes. Less and less employers are offering health insurance. The health insurance out there is growing at rates that more than double regular inflation, and they're tripling the growth in wages. People can't afford it, and they're looking for solutions.
You know, one thing is we're going to get to callers and it'll be nice to hear from them, because one thing I think the administration can tell you they've learned is if you want to divide the country, raise issues about health reform. We're now trying to cut through and get to the real facts these days. And the best way to do that is to sit down, have cool discussions, and talk about how we create some additional ways to cover people that right now just don't have insurance and don't have coverage.
Back shortly, 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we've got a full board of lights, and we'll hear from the American people next.
Since on OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
I'm sorry, emergency.
Oh my God! Oh my God, a driver just hit me!
Are there injuries?
I don't know. I can't get out of my truck!
I'll get 911 on the line for you.
In a crash, an OnStar advisor can automatically receive an alert.
911.
This is OnStar Emergency. I have a collision on Interstate 12 at exit 59. Called reporting possible injuries. Let me bring them online.
I can't move my leg.
We'll send someone out there to help you.
OnStar, are you still with me?
Yes, sir. I'll remain on the line with you until the police do arrive.
All right.
With automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can share your exact GPS location and critical crash details with first responders so they're better prepared to help.
The ambulance is coming.
Hope everything works out well for you. Please know we're here when you need us.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 14 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to calls right now. Anthony calling us from WLS in Chicago. Go ahead, Anthony. Hello, you're on the air. Anthony, are you there? Let's move on to Sam in Chicago on WLS.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello.
Listen, for the first time in my adult life, I had to get my own individualized health policy because of a marital status change, and I had absolutely no trouble getting one. It cost $253 a month, and I was thinking to myself as I was about to do it, with about an extra $50 a month, I could drive a brand new, beautiful BMW. And I thought, is it the BMW, or do I face bankruptcy if there is some problem in the near future? And I chose the health care. And I'm thinking, you know, if I chose the BMW, would I be one of the 47 million people? And I probably would be, wouldn't I? So I think a lot of the decision, a lot of that 47 million are people who've made the economic decision not to get a policy. And this leads to point number two. I actually had to use it just recently.
Sam, let me stop you right there. I'm going to give you an opportunity to do point two. But two of our guests were shaking their head no as you were making your comments. So let me go to Mike Condon first.
It's Condon, but that's
Condon.
Okay. We get that a lot.
Condon, right. With an M, that's right.
I'll throw that out to my dad for that one. He's heard that one before. Bruce, and our caller's name is Adam?
No, Sam. My name is Sam.
You know, Sam, interestingly enough, most of the people that we're talking about covering aren't worrying about purchasing BMWs. This is a choice between whether they eat or whether they don't have insurance.
That was a joke. I can't afford a BMW either. It's a little tight in my house, too. So I should have used a Taurus. And you might have
Let's operate from that premise. And okay. To your point, there. While you point out that it is getting better. What the administration is talking about in health reform is creating essentially an orbits travel for health care, being able to create a health insurance exchange that allows you to look at all the options. So presume at some point
went on the internet and I said I needed it, and I had to stop answering the phone that so many people, so many brokers were calling me up trying to sell me reasonably priced health insurance.
Now imagine, though, you have an issue where you actually had a heart issue about a year ago.
That is the issue. You are absolutely right. That is the problem.
Imagine for a second you're a different gender. It's a lot more expensive to cover women because they can get pregnant. And insurance companies ding them for that, including women your age.
Well, but if someone, this is the whole point. And Sam, I think you're raising a very good issue because I was one of those people. I wasn't earning a whole heck of a lot of money. They didn't have health insurance when I got my first job out of college. I've done a lot of different things, and I basically was uninsured. I had no health insurance for about 18 years. And quite frankly, I turned out fine. That was 18 years. I didn't get to buy a BMW, by the way. But it was 18 years that I didn't have to spend money on health insurance. What's wrong with that?
Go ahead, Sam.
Number two, I'm telling you, this is the incremental change that needs to be done. I had to go to the doctor. Doctor says you need a blood test. He says we do it and the hospital does it. So what's the next question with the idea that I have to pay up front $2,500 under my policy. Doctor, how much does it cost if you do it?
Bingo.
He says to me, I don't know. And I said, well, who knows? Well, somebody in billing. Have any idea what it costs for the hospital to do it? I don't know.
You know, and
this is my incremental change. Wait, this is the incremental change that could be enacted tomorrow. Why not have a federal law that says if you are a health care provider, even a state law, you must publish your price list so I could actively determine, do I want to go to the hospital at $250 or will I let the doctor do it for
let's let Mike respond.
Sam, you're doing a wonderful job of laying out exactly where health reform is trying to get, which is to start to make people more consumers as it relates to their own individual health choices. And at the end of the day, that's really what health reform is about. If you really take a look at things, people don't ask those questions about how much it costs. Doctors don't ask that question. And the real guts of the health reform bill is getting people to start to think about those issues. So quite frankly, Sam's on the right track. And if more people are starting to think about those issues, we're going to find ourselves in a much better situation.
And just from a standpoint, and I won't mention his name from, you know, the candidate I'm working for, Adam Andrzejewski, that is our health policy, that when you walk into a healthcare office and you have something done, whether it's a blood test or whether it's an x-ray or anything like that, every price of everything is published. And on top of it, doctors' outcomes and doctors' and hospital outcomes are published as well.
Chris in Wheeling, Illinois, go ahead. You're on the air coast to coast.
Yes, good evening. By the way, regarding that gentleman's last comment, I have a daughter who is 22 who's bipolar. And as long as she's on, fortunately, she's on her mother's health care coverage. But when she gets too old to be on it, she'll never get a call back from these insurance companies. And I have a cousin who's a breast cancer survivor who's in her early 50s. And if she should wind up without health insurance, she will never get a call back either. So I'm very much in favor of a public option. I think that Barack and the president should go in there, call in these recalcitrant Democratic blue dog senators. Brass knuckles, water boredom, whatever you do, you say there's no filibuster. You know, we will put through a bill. You know, you can vote against it, you can vote for it, but it's going to be 50 votes for it, 50 votes against it. You know, we either win or lose, but not, we don't require 60. And if you filibuster, as far as I'm concerned, you're no better than a Democrat, Republican, and we're going to defeat you, period. I mean, it's time to take the, you know, hammer off, act like Bush, act like Reagan. You know, they put through tax cuts with only 50 votes without this, you know, necessity of having 60 votes as filibuster, which is anti-constitutional. And
Chris,
it's time to really play Chicago politics and go. And if you need to put some people dead, then you kill them.
And Chris, the one thing it presumes, and again, what the health reform is going to is to create choice. A public option is certainly something the administration has offered. At the end of the day, however, it's about choice, and that's where we're going.
I want to hear, we're running out of time for hour number one. We're going to be here for another hour. I want to hear from Democrats in the next hour from all over the country who agree with what Chris just said. It's time for the Democratic president to get real tough and tell those that who are not on the reservation to get off the reservation. Back shortly.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If your credit card debt is out of control, if you're in over your head dealing with monthly payments, there is powerful information you need to know about the government's bailout of credit card companies. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe with monthly payments you can afford. Credit card companies have been given billions and need to clean their books once and for all. And that's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with payment plans customized for you. It's yours free by calling 1-800-400-5439. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes and learn how we have saved our clients millions. Live better, debt-free. For free information on how to settle your credit card debt in a government bailout era, call 1-800-400-5439. That's 1-800-400-5439. 1-800-400-5439.
online. With welcome rewards from Hotels.com, you get a free night after accumulating 10 nights with any of their partner hotels.
So Hotels.com is telling me to sleep around.
Exactly. Stay at a boutique, a national chain, anywhere. Sleep around.
Is that ethical?
Of course. Who wouldn't want you to sleep around?
My wife.
With Hotels.com, she can sleep around too.
What did you say?
You know what? That didn't come out right.
Accumulate 10 nights, even at different hotels, and earn a free night. Welcome rewards from Hotels.com. Smart. So smart. Some restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now, another reason to switch to GEICO.
Every month, we get lots of letters telling us how much folks like GEICO's claim service. And I quote, "The adjuster assigned to my claim was incredible. He walked me through everything." Then there's this one. GEICO.com is very useful and lets you track your claims. And this. "I filed a claim at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon, and my car was in the shop at 10 a.m. on Friday." And my personal favorite, "Easy Squeezy Lemon Peasy."
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
At Sam Adams, there is a rhythm of the seasons, so we've developed styles of beer to accompany that.
We brew Sam Adams Oktoberfest, Winter Lager, White Ale, and right now, there's Summer Ale.
Samuel Adams Summer Ale is a flavorful wheat beer. It has a very nice spice note.
It has a little lemon zest and a historic brewing spice called Grains of Paradise.
It's citrusy.
Lemon. Flavorful, refreshing.
Wow. Sam Adams, Summer Ale, it's just something about it. It's like totally reminds you of summer.
Boston Beer Company, Boston, Mass.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Ralph Martiri, Bruno Barron, and health management executive Mike Condron. Our program tonight coming to you from our Sirius XM studios on Chicago's West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btb@museum.tv.com. And in hour number one, we riled up a lot of people, and they're on the line waiting to get into our discussion. So let's head to the southwest. Austin, Texas is the place. Alan is the caller listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead. You're on the air, Alan.
Hi, Bruce. I last called about 3 years ago, but I'm a faithful listener. Love the program.
Terrific.
If you're maintaining a tally, I am a complete free market advocate in health care. I think that's the reform that's needed. But there is no right to free care or to health care. But I do want to ask a question about the provision that's being advocated of covering pre-existing conditions. Granted that I don't think it ought to be in there at all, how can you possibly justify that? That's part of the definition of insurance. You buy the insurance before something happens. Once it's there, you shouldn't be able to get insurance for it. And I just want to hear how people try to justify that provision.
Mike's got a comment on
that. I can certainly help with that, Alan. That really is where the rubber meets the road when it comes to issues concerning when it comes to being covered. If you're denied for a pre-existing condition, you make a presumption and then that person goes away. And ultimately, the system, one way or another, is going to pay for that person once they develop either a chronic condition or they're back in the ER. And so the difference between the fundamentals of insurance as it relates to auto insurance and say, well, now you're stuck with the liability versus health insurance is at the end of the day, and if you read this bill, it tackles a way from a cost efficiency perspective to cover that person that ultimately is going to tax our system whether they have the insurance or not. And that's really the basis for why health reform is on the table in a real bipartisan effort.
Bruno Barron has a comment.
It's interesting to hear both of these views because I tend to look at things from a libertarian viewpoint on this too, and it is a business decision, and I'm a free market guy. there might be free market solutions. And this goes right back to Chris right before the break talking about how there has to be a public option. What if we had a situation where you purchased insurance from a very early age, almost like a enrollment kind of thing off of your either your pay or even if you wanted to look at something from a stipend, and then you were always were insured no matter what. So if you have a pre-existing conditions stop becoming an issue if you're always insured from day one, as opposed to health insurance. The biggest insanity this country ever did goes back to the 40s when we tied health insurance to our jobs. It never made sense. It doesn't make sense now. It's absurd. So if you always had insurance, you always would be insured, hence getting rid of the pre-existing condition issue.
Now, Ralph Marturi, you were shaking your head yes when he made that comment about the 1940s?
Yeah, I do think that it was insane to tie insurance to a job and job benefit. It's not economically sustainable over time, particularly not when you look at the incredible growth in the cost of health insurance coverage, outstripping the CPI significantly, outstripping, frankly, the big government-run Medicaid program by a good 40 points in the last decade. So it really is a very expensive way to go. It puts in a tremendous burden on business. It takes a lot out of our economy, and it's really not very good.
You know, I actually disagree with that point, and a lot of it has to do with you sit back and you've gotten a time capsule. You're right. Maybe separate health insurance from your job, but think about what it does for our gross domestic product. How many people do you meet on a daily basis that say, part of why I have this job is so that I can have my health insurance? And at the end of the day, there is some efficiency, and if you think about it from a gross domestic product perspective, or more importantly from the labor side of the house, many people are working to
participate
and
contribute.
What they're
also saying, Mike, though, is part of the reason I have this mind-numbing, soul-crunching job is I can't afford not to have health insurance, and I wouldn't work here at this wage
right.
but for
yeah.
that.
And
I don't think it promotes efficiency. I think it promotes inefficiency in labor markets.
This is interesting. The man in the middle is saying this, and the two ideologues here are in agreement. What I think is fascinating about it is, first of all, I don't know that it's done that much for our GDP. Entrepreneurial organizations outperform large corporate organizations in most situations, whether it's Apple Computer being started in a garage overtaking IBM or Google or whatever you want to look at. So I look at things this way. Why is it that the corporation gets to deduct its taxes, it gets to deduct what it spends on health insurance back, and this is when they changed this back in the 40s with the tax law, but a guy who's working out of his home, maybe doing sheet metal work or building bicycles, if he wants to go and buy insurance, he doesn't have the same subsidy. He ought to.
Let's go to Joe in Chicago on WLS and Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, thanks for letting me on, Bruce. First off, I want to say that I do agree wholeheartedly with Chris. I think Obama, my biggest disappointment at Obama is that he's not willing to get tough and, you know, go in there and fight for what he says he believes in. But I'd also like to ask a little bit different question, if I could.
Go ahead.
Every time I turn on the TV, I see all these, you know, lovely ads for hospitals and their services all over the radio. There's a local hospital that sent one of their WLS programs to Hawaii for an entire week to do a remote. Mm-hmm. And just how much? I mean, just how much does that add to what we're paying for healthcare?
There's certainly, Joe. There's certainly
yeah.
some issues, Joe, that hospitals are facing in the wake of these discussions around health reform. A lot of what our company focuses on, quite frankly, is keeping people out of unnecessary hospital visits and putting them and caring for them more at home. So at the end of the day, you raise a really interesting point. Hospitals, like many other things, are businesses. And the more bed days we have, the more people that we have in the hospitals, the better for the hospitals. Not necessarily the best for the system, however. And that really is part of the crux, or the real crux of health reform, is how do we care for people utilizing technology? How do we help people while they're at home stay at home? Because quite frankly, how many people do you know that want to be cared for and have their health care covered in a hospital?
And I've got some numbers on that. So for instance, if you are a person needing home-based community care, but it's not available, you get institutionalized. Well, a nursing home average costs about $33,000, $34,000 per year per person. Community-based care is about $6,000 per person. I'm thinking we ought to find a way to make these community-based services available for health care and for a lot of these things. And it provides a much higher quality of life for the individual who's being treated. They get to stay in their home, in their community. They get to still live a life they're used to. And I think that would be huge. But as far as the real need or the inefficiencies this creates in our marketplace, I found a study by the Commonwealth Fund that showed 72 million Americans right now that aren't elderly, that's 41% of the non-elderly, have accumulated significant medical debt, so significant that it's putting them either in bankruptcy or on the verge of that. Now, that's a significant portion of the non-elderly population, and interestingly enough, 61% of these have insurance. So there are huge marketplace distortions caused by the way we deliver health care and we provide health care coverage that need to be exploded.
Well, if fair enough, but let's also throw Medicaid. Let's throw Medicaid and Medicare on the table as well, because their cost shifting is one of the reasons why that is a problem. So there's two sides to all of this stuff, and I think it's time we actually popped open the hood and looked at every single aspect of it.
Sam, we're going to break right now, but when we come back, I also want to talk about your point about that the president's got to get a little bit tougher and maybe show a tougher side in this battle, and we'll do that when we come back from Chicago.
I'm living paycheck to paycheck. We're so far into debt.
All we do is fight about it.
We don't know what to do anymore.
How would you like to get a call finding out that your Visa bill had been reduced from $8,000 to $4,800? What about discovering you had an extra $500 to $1,200 in your budget per month because of what you are saving on your credit card bills? All of these dreams are possible when you make 1 5-minute call to Jordan McKenna. They will match you to a reputable law firm that can stop harassing collection calls, reduce your monthly payments, and save you literally thousands of dollars off your credit card debt. They work for you, not the credit card company, so you can get the maximum savings possible for your situation. Call for free information now. 800-204-6773. Individual results will vary, so please review all program details and terms. Call 800-204-6773. That's 800-204-6773. 800-204-6773.
From San Diego to Lincolnwood, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us. The caller in the last segment underscored something said at the end of the first hour, and that is the president maybe should be a little tougher, at least on some of the Democrats, and maybe the way to get this thing done is to bring all the Democrats in and say, listen, we're gonna pass this. Forget bipartisan. We're going to ram this down. We're going to ram this down the throat, pay the consequences, and maybe that's the best way to do it. One thing that was mentioned in a couple of segments ago was how, in many ways, Sarah Palin has been able to really adject and certainly inject herself into the political debate. Maureen Dowd, writing in the New York Times today, suggested that because of that one catchy phrase about death panels, that really she sort of disrupted, certainly took the president off his game, put everybody on the defense for the last 10 days. And she also said something which underscores what our last caller had to say, and that is that Sarah Palin, and she should know this, that when you look at Barack Obama and you look at the way he conducted himself in the campaign, this is Maureen Dowd suggesting this now, is that he's vulnerable on matters that demand a visceral and muscular response rather than a logical and book-learned one. Mr. Obama was charming and informed in his town hall meeting in Montana on Friday, but he's going to need some sustained passion, a clear plan, and a narrative as gripping as Palin's I See Dead People scenario, which means that he may have to sort of bring people in. And it's kind of hard to believe that we're still talking about a White House that, at least a president who may be a little too kinder and a little too gentler at a time when the chief of staff is Rahm Emanuel. I mean, from a political standpoint, and let me ask you are certainly, I think, probably the biggest Obama fan. You've been on the show as a fan of Obama, Ralphs. Are you marginally upset, marginally concerned with the way the politics of this has been handled, or are you just sort of lukewarm about your concern?
Well, I don't know if I'm concerned about it. I'm a realist about it. Would I personally have done things in a different way than Barack Obama? Yeah, I'm a different person than Barack Obama. See, the thing you have to understand is an individual gets to a certain point in life and their personality and their way of doing things is well formed. Barack Obama likes to reach consensus. He doesn't like contentious partisan baiting and bantering. He enjoys finding a middle road where everyone comes together. That is the essence of him as a person. I don't expect him to suddenly change who he is as the chief executive. In this case, it may or may not be serving him well. Frankly, I think it was the right thing to do to reach out to Congress in the beginning, avoid anything that looked like the old Hillary approach to this problem. But it is turning out that his Democratic Party isn't necessarily helping him. So what I would do if I was Barack, and here's where I'm hopefully he'll go, is set Rahm loose behind the scenes. Let Rahm do what Rahm does best. He's got no problem cracking heads and making people accountable and bringing them in and using every power of that office.
What
Barack
would be
doesn't have to
what
do that.
Would be wrong if this made it through Congress without one Republican vote? What would be wrong with that?
I can certainly answer that. What would be wrong with that is something so critical to health reform to be able to ramrod it through. The first thing that goes wrong with that will be then put on the Democrats. And I think, you know, it's almost sad that, you know, there's this feeling that Obama has to be the collaborator in chief. But at the end of the day, they want a bipartisan bill. And as something as important as this, you know, there have been Republicans,
but
just
do
as many
they, but
Republicans.
But do they want it? And by the way, this same thing could be said that the parties we could flip the parties here. Mm-hmm. Is it because parties and leaders of parties don't have enough confidence in what they're trying to ramrod through? That they're looking for a CYA. They're looking
Well, I'm going to say in Barack's case that wouldn't be it. I mean, Barack could be completely convinced that he is right. But he may also see other people aren't with him yet. And what Barack as a leader is willing to give folks the time to catch up to him. It doesn't – I know it gets perceived that he is weak or that it gets perceived that he lacks passion. It's just his approach, Bruce. He is not necessarily going to say, I have figured this out, so you darn well better catch up with
Joe me. Joe and Schomburg, you want to follow up on that?
What's that? Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, panel. You know what? I do think that as a Democrat, you want to call some Democrats. I do think that he should start getting tough for the simple reason. If the Republicans had 60 votes in the Senate, they wouldn't give the Democrats the time of day. I think he's being too lenient and too nice. And with this co-op, he may be in trouble again with this party because there's a lot of liberal Democrats who are sticking to their guns, Bruce, and saying that they will not vote for something that doesn't have a public option. And how many votes do you think, even with this co-op, he's going to get from the Republicans? They want this president to fail, plain and simple. They're not.
I think where he's going to lose, though, he may lose votes in the.
I'm a single-payer guy myself, by the way.
He's going to lose votes, I think, maybe in the House on this.
On what? On the co-op?
On the co-op issue. I don't think necessarily he will lose many in the Senate.
Oh, yes,
Kent Conrad seems to think they've got the votes in the Senate for this.
Well, for the co-op?
I'm not a single-payer guy. I don't really subscribe to Ralph's every single one of Ralph's sunny dispositions of how smart Barack is.
Let me
finish something. Okay, here's the point.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with Barack Obama cracking heads and getting a Democratic bill pounded through Congress. That would be pretty good strategery for Republicans because the moment something goes wrong with it, then you have just like going back to 1993. So you said that if the Republicans had 60 votes, they would ram something through.
They
had the House and the Senate and the presidency, and they couldn't get Social Security reform through. And I think they had a better case than Barack has on health care. So I don't really think any of this stuff is true. All these politicians are afraid of making a mistake and taking a bath later on.
Okay, Joe, back to you.
Do you guys think with this co-op, I mean, obviously, if it works, it's going to be a big boon for the president. Obviously, if it works, I mean, we all know that. But don't the Republicans also risk if they vote for this co-op and it does work, they're going to say to themselves, "Oh man, look at this! This guy's approval ratings are in the upper 60s. What did we do? This guy is succeeding now."
Joe, this is Mike. You may be right if this was only about a co-op issue, and
I still think the public option is not dead. That's just me. Did the White House, did it actually come from the president himself?
No, and let's be clear. We're talking about something that may happen.
It might have been a leak.
Yeah, well, let's talk about something that is happening.
In
the health reform bill, this is a very small subset of a much larger bill that gets at a lot of issues.
Okay.
And the idea is to essentially bring people to become more proactive about their own health. Okay. And so the interesting thing is this won't rest or fail whether there is a single payer issue or whether there is a public option. One thing the administration, what Obama has clearly set out to do,
okay,
is to create more choice. And that's really the point of the health insurance exchange. The really interesting point in all this, and this is the great thing about being on this kind of program, is everything that's, you know, being raised about death squads and all these things,
which is not true.
Yeah, at the end of the day, this is really about creating more options, not fewer options, and making sure people that don't have coverage now somehow, some way, have an efficient way to have their health managed.
Well,
because
I just,
right now it's not efficient.
By the way, let me
That's right.
Let me just make an observation about timing on this. You know, you talked about, well, is this really official? Well, it's not official yet, but we're talking about what's been leaked. It's been leaked, to the Associated Press. It does not confirm the White House on anything, but it's coming out late in the day on a Sunday, which means, in my view, somebody wants to upstage all the things that have been on the Sunday morning shows today. All the administration people were out there debating what's going on. This is something that comes in late in the afternoon. They want this story to be on the front page and to lead all the news tonight and tomorrow and dominate tomorrow during the day, which means to me that somebody somewhere, and maybe it is Rahm Emanuel, somebody wants this to take over and really push the idea of a public option out of the debate once and for all.
To echo your point, Bruce, when you read, as you have quoted from President Obama's article today in the New York Times, there is no mention any longer of a public option. There is additional, issues about choice. There's additional points made about the real meat and potatoes behind health reform. But I think it's pretty clear, and even Secretary Sebelius said, we're not looking and hinging our entire health reform plan on this public option. What does that mean for some liberals? Maybe that's a problem.
Yeah, they're redefining a victory as well. Cynthia in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Well, you know, forget about Barack Obama's article. How about the article that Zeke Emanuel wrote in Lancet just a couple of months ago? Everyone should read that, and they should read on page 6, where he himself advocates that individuals between 15 and 40 should get care, and basically if you're younger than 15 or older than 40, that you are not a priority for medical care. And also, if the Senate was confident in this health care reform, then they would not exempt themselves from it. It's not about health care. It's got a bunch of language about the IRS getting access to your bank account, and there's no mention of excluding the 40 million illegal aliens who are a big part of the cost increase that we have seen in medical care. Every time we go to an emergency room here in Austin, Texas, it's full of illegal aliens that we're paying for
that
their
is,
care.
But they are not eligible in any health care reform.
That is not
currently
true. They are, Bruce.
Well, interestingly,
they should come out and say and put it in black and white that illegal aliens will not be eligible
for
medical care.
Mike's got a comment.
And I'm sorry, what's your name?
Mike's got a comment.
Cynthia.
Cynthia,
actually,
you know what?
Actually,
he's going to give you, he's going to give you an answer. We do have to pause. Stay on the line, Cynthia, okay?
Okay.
We're going to continue our discussion, and we'll talk a little bit more about Zeke Emanuel and even in trying to clear the slate and maybe calm things down a little bit. He may have inadvertently made things even worse. We'll talk about that when we come back from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Introducing the Ally Bank 12-month high-yield CD with such a great annual return of 2% APY, people think there's a catch. But no, no catch, no teaser rate, no limited time offer, no fine print, jargon, or legalese, no hidden tricks, traps, pitfalls, curveballs, or doublespeak. Just a 12-month high-yield CD with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally, straightforward. Member FDIC.
These are tough economic times, so I want you to think about something. Gold. At Goldline is the company you can trust for your gold needs. They've been in business since 1960, so call them today. 877-361-COIN. That's 877-361-COIN. They've been audited from a Big Four accounting firm. Their financials are solid. So call them today for a free investor's kit. 877-361-COIN. You get the free DVD and free shipping on your first order at 877-361-COIN. And remember, goldline.com.
From Austin, Texas to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. And before I reintroduce our guests, I should mention that yesterday, some friends, we went up to Milwaukee for the Irish Fest up there. Milwaukee is a wonderful city. If you've not been there, I'm sure we probably have people listening in Milwaukee this evening. And out at the Mayor Henry Meyer Festival Park, which was wonderful, beautiful day. And again, it's a great city. And then I learned last night that the mayor of Milwaukee, Tom Barrett, who was coming home from Irish Fest, I guess was trying to come to the aid of a woman who was screaming for help, and he got accosted and beaten with a pipe, and I guess he's in the hospital. So that's a mayor going to the streets to try to help someone in trouble. But again, we wish the mayor of Milwaukee a quick recovery from being a good Samaritan, and he got a clunk in the head because of it. Joining us this evening to share their thoughts and opinions, we have Bruno Berend.
Well,
tell everybody who you are.
My name is Bruno Berend.
In 20 seconds or less.
A political consultant under my company, Da Vinci Consulting Group, for Adam Andrzejewski. He's running for governor here in Illinois. Clean, fresh face, you know, reform the Republican Party before you can reform Illinois.
And we're going to have him on the show in a few weeks, and he's going to make his maiden voyage on this program.
I hope so.
And also Mike. With us this evening, we have Mike Condron.
Thank you very much, Bruce, and we appreciate the appropriate pronunciation of our name. My name is Mike Condron. I'm the CEO of Care Guide, a health solutions company focused on creating some of the solutions we've been talking about these last few minutes.
Thanks and Ralph Bartieri is here. He is...
I'm executive director.
Well, Center tell everybody the real... I mean, why you're famous, though. Everybody knows the great name, Ralph Bartieri, one of the great band leaders of all time, and he's a relative.
He is a relative, second cousin of my dad, who's also named Ralph Bartieri. And I spell the name the real way, M-A-R-T-I-R-E. He added an extra E in there because everyone was pronouncing it Martire. So if you pick up one of his old records, it's spelled M-A-R-T-I-E-R-E. But that was just to get to people to pronounce the name correctly.
You know, the next time we have you on the show, I think all of our bumper music will be Ralph Bartieri music.
Excellent. There great trumpet player.
Okay. Very good. We have Cynthia. Are you still there in Austin, Texas?
I am, yeah.
You have been very patient, and you had made a comment before the break. And Mike Condron, he has the bill or one of the bills in front of him, and he's going to answer your question.
Well, Cynthia, I know the article you were speaking of with respect to the current bill that was pending in the House, H.R. 3200. Actually, there are two provisions that clearly are state that this bill is to cover natural citizens. You raise, more importantly, though, an issue that we're seeing throughout the ERs, which is when someone comes in with an issue, we don't ask for that. And there are a serious problem that this bill, quite frankly, doesn't address, which is what happens, who pays, and ultimately our system does pay when folks that are not citizens have an emergent event that they cannot afford. But in Section 152 of this bill, it's not only clearly stating that it goes to only those who qualify, citizens, but there is a prohibition of discrimination in health care. Now, that goes to issues about age, sex, race, and what type of conditions they have, but they all...
But have you read Zeke Emanuel's article, Principles for Allocation of Scarce Medical Interventions, that he wrote this year and published in Lancet? And have you read John Mackey, the founder of Whole Foods, op-ed that he just wrote, where he gives a great, simple, 7-point plan? Zeke Emanuel specifically says that he advocates a priority for people, treating people ages 15 through 40 in a attenuated
attention to younger and older people.
Now,
that is scary.
Cynthia,
Cynthia, Sarah Palin being kooky.
Cynthia,
let me mention this
because this is important. And again, this is covered also in the Maureen Dowd article today in the New York Times. Your point is well taken, because the words and the writings of Zeke Emanuel, who is the older brother of Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff at the White House,
position with this administration.
Yes, he is. He is an advisor. There's no question about that. But the comments of Sarah Palin have so upset the White House and so taken them off the game, they had him come back from his vacation in the Italian Alps because they knew that his past words were changing the debate. They were changing the debate based on his own words. When he came back, he gave an interview to the Washington Times in which he said his thinking has evolved on the very vexing issue of dissent. Let me make my point, please, Cynthia, and then I'll give you the last word on it. But listen to what he said now. This is contemporary thinking. This isn't 20 years ago, 5 years ago. This is now from the Washington Times. This is Zeke Emanuel. When I began working in the health policy area about 20 years ago, I thought we would definitely have to ration care, that there was a need to make a decision and deny people care, he told the paper, adding that he now feels that if we get rid of expensive, unnecessary care, that we would have absolutely no reason to even consider rationing except, and here's where he gets himself in trouble again, in a few cases.
Right.
So
well,
what are those few cases?
His article that was written a couple of months ago, it wasn't written 20 years ago, because what I stated is just scratching the surface of the horrendous things he said. And if he said 20 years ago that he thought that we were going to have to ration and deny care, he is outside of the mainstream of America, and he was 20 years ago.
And the good news, Cynthia, is his views aren't in the bill.
Can I? Well, actually, that's not fair. Cynthia's right, and she's making a very, very important point. And the Obama administration has been forced various times here to backtrack off of things they said. I mean, let's go all the way back to the 80s when a Democratic Colorado governor basically got himself in trouble by saying people may end up having a duty to die. I mean, and that was, you know, maybe he
Richard Lamb ended
his political career. But the fact of the matter is that if you are going to go to a single payer style system, or if you are going to try to morph our existing system into one where choices are dictated, or where things are dictated, or the access you have to care, whether you're very young or very old, are dictated, and you end up having climbing costs, you are going to be forced to ration.
It should have to be subscribed to that system. They should not be allowed to be part of a different system.
I'm sorry, Bruno, but it's time to counter everything you just said because it's completely misleading and inaccurate. Nothing that President Obama said indicates he's for rationing health care, and it's not in the bill. So to ascribe the words of Zeke from whenever to Barack Obama and his administration is simply inaccurate. It's not fair. That's number one. Number two, it's not even in the bill, and nothing he's ever proposed would limit options or choices. Nothing. Yet you want to repeat that argument because it's a powerful right-wing argument that somehow, some way, the government... Well, let me finish, Bruno.
Okay.
That somehow, some way, the government is about limiting options. It doesn't do that. And in fact, existing Medicaid program, which currently insures 46 million Americans, doesn't limit options.
And gentlemen and
Why
Cynthia.
Why doesn't Obama sign on to this new plan, whatever gross form it's going to be in? Why doesn't Obama commit to have everybody who works for the government be part of this new plan and show us ignoramuses the way?
And gentlemen and Cynthia, to respond to your point, let's go back to Obama's campaign, which was to provide adequate cost and efficient coverage to those who didn't have it at the same level that he had in the Senate. And so that really is the end goal in this debate. And this is, again, why you have the president asking us to tone down the rhetoric. Because at the end of the day, whether someone's brother or cousin or uncle wrote an article, it's really at the base. When you look at the health reform bill and what the White House has put out, it has literally nothing to do with rationing care, but rather to provide more choice so that we counter the issue of the fact that people don't have care.
And in this particular case, just to be clear, because Cynthia brought up an interesting point. The fact is, based in House Bill 3200, it specifically says that it does not include illegal immigrants.
That's correct.
That is a fact. That is a fact. But what you have stated, Cynthia, is also a fact in that there are hundreds or thousands of hospitals around the United States who, if an illegal immigrant and their family walk in, they must provide them with health care treatment.
Which brings,
it has nothing to do
right.
with
which,
this
which
bill.
Brings me to a,
nothing
which
to do
which
with
brings
it.
Me to a very important point that I want to respond to Ralph, because he came at me pretty hard here. I'm reminded of Hubert Humphrey sitting on the floor of the Senate, pounding away about the Civil Rights Act and saying, if this is a quota bill, I'll eat this bill. There was nothing in that bill that said there's going to be quotas. There was nothing in that bill that said it was going to go in a certain direction. There was so on and so forth. Here's the fact, America. They can write a bill that says in every second line, this is a choice bill. This is a choice bill. This is something that will increase your choices. But the fine print of that bill, or the fine print of how the administrative ideas are set up, or the way that it actually operates, it does exactly what it says it doesn't do. So it is worth it for all of us to be careful and look at every single line of the bill and see what it's going to do.
Cynthia, thanks very much. I'm going to go back, by the way. I have been reading the four promises, the four plans, the four elements, the four-point health care reform plan of the president. They're in the New York Times today. I've read the first two in the first part of our broadcast. Here's the third point I want to get everybody's reaction to. By making Medicare more efficient, we'll be able to ensure that more tax dollars go directly to caring for seniors instead of enriching insurance companies. This will not only help provide today's seniors with the benefits they've been promised, it will ensure the long-term health of Medicare for tomorrow's seniors, and our reform will also reduce the amount our seniors pay for their prescription drugs. That's what he said. I want to get a reaction from our guests in studio when we come back from Chicago.
I had a great idea at work yesterday. So, I gathered my A-team to meet online using WebEx. I passed the ball
to Carol in Atlanta, and I created some killer graphics. Then, I passed the ball to
Taz in San Jose because I write the code that makes their ideas work online. Then I passed the ball to
Logan in Cambridge. I'm kind of the keeper of cool. And hey, it was cool.
So now, my idea wasn't just an idea. It was our hot new product line, created by our national development team.
Spread across three time zones.
And we couldn't have done it without passing the ball.
Using WebEx, the only way to pass the ball online.
Pass the ball. Get your ideas rolling. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code BONUS to get a free trial and a free retractable VoIP headset. Remember that code, BONUS. WebEx from Cisco, WEBEX.com. Free headsets available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Before we talk about this third point that the president was addressing today in the New York Times, I want Ralph Martiri to follow up on something that Cynthia had referred to. And again, we get a lot of calls on this. And the question is, it is a fact in many sectors of society or in the geographic regions that hospitals are inundated with health care requests from illegal immigrants. And hospitals are responsible for taking care of those individuals. How do they get paid for it? Or what's the trade-off for a hospital that does that, Ralph?
Yeah, doing that is called providing charity care, free reduced care to anyone that shows up at your door, regardless of their ability to pay or their citizenship or documentation. And the way they're compensated for that is by being given tax breaks, not having to pay property taxes, not having to pay sales taxes, not having to pay income taxes, either at the state or the federal level. So that reduction in their tax burden is supposed to cover their provision of charity care. We've done an analysis of charity care provided, let's say, in the Chicago metropolitan region, and what we found was the dollar value of the charity care delivered, the free and reduced care to anyone who shows up, was about $170 million less than the value of these collective tax breaks. So at least in the Chicago area, the hospitals are being compensated for the levels of charity care they're giving out. I don't know about the Austin community. They may have a very different balance.
But is it all hospitals or is
nonprofit?
Nonprofit hospitals.
Right.
So a for-profit hospital that has an emergency room, or
they could turn them away.
According to federal law and federal case law
state law.
Okay, so I mean the complexities of this, and I guess that this is going back to the point in terms of having these ideological debates, which I think are valuable. But when it comes to actually solving the problem, I think it's entirely fair for every American citizen. It's fair for Democrats to be wary of a Bush administration proposal, and it's fair for Republicans to be wary of an Obama administration proposal. And I get a kick out of this thing in the last – we have in the article here, in the end, this isn't about politics, Barack Obama writes. This is about people's lives and livelihoods. I mean, let's be intellectually honest. This is very much about politics, and every single – party and every single politician has the people who funded them and the people who gave them, why is it that the insurance industry is more on board this year? Well, they see that they're not in the same position. They can't fight as easily, so they're caving. If they get a little bit of their piece of the pie, the price tag for the pharmaceutical industry was $80 billion. You know, everybody's on board for something. And the citizens are right to question and go to town halls and jump up and down and ask what's going on.
Mike, you were going to comment about the Medicare and the senior citizens, which was part of point three.
Yeah, I'm going to quote something out of this summary of the act, Bruce. And with respect to Medicare, I think this is what President Obama says when it's not about politics is there truly is a need for bipartisan reform of Medicare. So let's talk a little bit about what they're proposing. There's obviously key payment issues right now that exist. There's a need to bundle certain payments that right now are fractionalized, and that has created inefficiencies. But what I really like about this bill and what really I would expect to have bipartisan support is what's quoted as rolling out innovative concepts such as accountable care organizations, medical homes, and then most importantly, new payment incentives to aim for the hospitals to decrease preventable hospital readmissions, expanding the policy over time to recognize that the physicians and post-acute providers play an important role in avoiding readmissions. And really, at the end of the day, we're talking about moving the cheese. Essentially getting the system to start to change its approach to how they provide care. If we can align the system in Medicare so that we're all focused on getting people cared for at the home, utilizing technology in their homes, the most expensive part of healthcare are those ER visits and unnecessary hospitalizations. And as we said, I don't know how many patients and relatives you all have that want to be in the hospital, but at the end of the day, from a Medicare perspective, if there is a way to keep fewer people from having these unnecessary visits, being steered back to their physicians, and essentially at the end of the day, having the physicians have incentive to keep folks out of the hospital, that would be a good thing. And right now, that's not how the system's set up. The system encourages you from a liability perspective, if you're a physician, to essentially send someone to the hospital because it covers you. It covers your liabilities for not doing that. And that's really what's at the heart of Medicare reform.
Let's take one more call. Let's go to Sam in, is it Sevierville, Tennessee, Sam?
This is Tim, yeah, thank you.
Tim, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. I'm a worker, and I've worked for 30 years so far, and the insurance system that we got now just doesn't work for the working people. If you work for an industry, all they've got to do is change insurance companies, and they dump every sick person they've got into limbo at this moment. Later, they might go to a public plan, but right now, I'm in limbo. I got a bill for $147,000. I'm alive, and they have the best health care system in the world, you might say, but we got the worst insurance system on God's earth.
And there was a comment made earlier today.
This is my
condom. There was a comment made earlier today on Meet the Press that we have an islands of excellence in a sea of mediocrity when it comes to healthcare. And the caller's point here, really, that's part of the issue, is we have people now that are faced with potentially filing personal and bankruptcy to be able to pay these bills.
You are one of the 72 million Americans, or 41% of the non-elderly population, that has accumulated significant medical debt. 61% of which had some form of insurance. We have a system that is insanely expensive. It is cost growth at a time outstripping the growth in wages by 10, 20, 30 times. And workers really just can't keep up with it. Well, and if they lose it at their job, they lose it.
Okay, so fine. Let's find a way to fix it. But you don't fix it by taking all the parts of it, the system that work, and going back to the hospitals. I mean, I know we're running out of time here, but I wish my wife was on the show with me here. She'd tell you all the different things that the insurance industry is doing, and the hospital industry, and the healthcare industry is doing to try and reduce second visits and hospitalization visits. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Next time we'll have her on.
This problem is solvable, folks, and we don't need a public option, and we don't need to go to single payer to solve
it. But more importantly, good luck to our caller, because that's the kind of issue that health reform is targeted, and we hope that from your perspective that you have an ability to see health reform make meaningful change for you.
Public option is the only way to have a big enough pool of patients in it to drive down costs reasonably nationwide.
$147,000 bill is quite a cross to bear, sir. But again, you have a clear voice, and we're glad that you shared it with us tonight. On that note, we say farewell to Bruno Behrend and to Ralph Martiri and to Michael Condron. He is the CEO of CareGuide. And our thanks to Tom Veracruz, Ben Stewart, and Kate Shepard. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Losing your hair is bad news. Denial doesn't help. I'm Brian Reichenberg with exciting news. If you've been waiting for science to create a miracle, our lab in Italy has just released Kevis 8. This is the world's first topically applied enzyme complex that targets DHT, the medically recognized cause of hair loss. For years, thousands have received amazing results with Kevis, and now it's even better. Clinically tested, Kevis 8 promotes healthy hair growth for both men and women. Kevis can be used in conjunction with other products and treatments. Kevis, that's K-E-V-I-S. In celebration of our new 8th generation release, first 200 callers will receive 50% off plus an additional 30 days free. Call now, 888-604-HAIR. 888-604-HAIR. Call 888-604-HAIR. That's 888-604-HAIR.
It's the medicine your mom gave you as a kid. The medicine you trusted when you were pregnant. And for many, it's what you rely on to ease arthritis pain. Tylenol has been trusted for over 50 years. And while store brands make pills that look just like Tylenol, it's important to know they're not made by Tylenol. The only way to get the brand you've trusted your whole life, the brand doctors recommend most, is to buy the brand doctors recommend most. Feel better. Tylenol. Use only as directed.
I'm Jim Cook, brewer and founder of Sam Adams. And nearly every day for the past 24 years, I've had a Sam Adams Boston Lager. Rich amber color. And a head so thick you can float a bottle cap on it. I taste a sample from every batch, and I still look forward to the taste of the next one. Ah, delicious. Samuel Adams Boston Lager. Yeah. Cheers. Boston Beer Company, Boston, Mass.
With welcome rewards from Hotels.com, you get a free night after accumulating 10 nights with any of their partner hotels.
Surely my boutique hotel is not included in that.
Yes, it is, lady.
My band, Sned Leplin, stays in chain hotels just off the freeway. Those included?
With Hotels.com, you bet, Mr. Brojangles.
What about a bed and breakfast?
Faux shizzle.
Hotels on the moon?
No.
Accumulate 10 nights, even at different hotels, and earn a free night. Welcome rewards from Hotels.com. Smart. So smart. Some restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm about to present to you a straightforward commercial for GEICO, the third largest personal auto insurer in the country. Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to GEICO, and GEICO received a customer satisfaction rate of 97%. Standard & Poor's has consistently awarded GEICO a AAA rating for financial strength. This is usually where I'd say something cute or clever. But like I said at the beginning, we're keeping this straightforward. Goodbye to you now.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.